Imagine buying like a second steering wheel for your car before you've even bought the tires.
Right.
You wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't make the car drive any faster.
No.
It doesn't make it safer. It just, it leaves you sitting in your driveway holding a piece of plastic while everyone else just speeds right by you.
Yeah, exactly.
And in the world of high stakes fantasy football, that is exactly what drafting a backup defense in the seventh round looks like.
Oh, yeah.
And yet in the data we're pouring over today, a manager did exactly that.
It's honestly, it is the ultimate manifestation of draft day panic.
Yeah.
Because we're looking at a comprehensive breakdown of a 2026 12-team PPR draft. 12 very distinct rosters.
Right.
Graded and analyzed, not just for, you know, who they picked, but the structural integrity of how those rosters were actually built. And the most glaring takeaway isn't just about player evaluation. It's about the psychological traps that managers fall into when that clock is ticking down.
Welcome to the deep dive. We've got a massive stack of sources here detailing every single pick, the positional strategies, the biggest draft savers, and the fatal structural flaws from this specific league.
Yeah, there are a lot of flaws.
So many.
Hmm.
And our mission today is to dissect the anatomy of these draft builds. And we want to bypass the simple list of names and get into the actual mechanics of roster construction. Like, why do incredibly smart people build incredibly fragile teams?
Well, to answer that, we really have to look at how managers deal with the inherent chaos of the NFL.
Okay.
Because a fantasy draft is essentially an attempt to mathematically model human behavior, physical wow. health, and coaching tendencies, which is impossible.
Right. It's so chaotic.
Exactly. So some managers lean into that chaos by drafting for pure upside.
Yeah.
While others try to control the chaos by building quote unquote safe floors. And as the data shows, the managers who desperately seek safety are usually the ones who completely tank their draft grades.
Okay. Let's unpack this tension between chaos and safety. Because I want to start with the teams that absolutely nailed the structural math.
Sure.
The top overall grade, a pristine A, went to the Fantasy football team.
Yeah, beautiful draft.
Incredible. When you look at their board, they didn't just draft good players. They manipulated positional scarcity perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
They anchored with Bijan Robinson and Drake London. But their undisputed masterstroke was taking tight end Trey McBride at pick 3.3.
That pick fundamentally alters the math of their weekly matchups.
Oh, so?
Well, in a 12-team format, the tight end position operates on this super steep cliff.
Oh, right.
You have the elite difference makers, and then you have just a massive swamp of guys hoping to catch a random touchdown.
Yeah, total wasteland.
Right. So by securing McBride at 3.3, this manager guaranteed themselves a mathematical advantage at that specific position every single week. But the crucial part is how they did it. Because they took that positional advantage without sacrificing their wide receiver depth, which is the trap that most managers fall into when they take an early tight end.
Right, because they backed it up with Ladd McConkey, Terry McLaurin, and DK Metcalf.
Exactly.
And it's like looking at a perfectly diversified index fund.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
They have built-in contingency plans everywhere.
Yeah.
But here's where the data gets really fascinating to me. Even the undisputed best draft in the league had a massive blind spot.
They did.
Their worst pick, according to the grading, was taking Alvin Kamara at 15.3. Now, I have to push back a little on the algorithm here.
Okay.
Getting Kamara in the 15th round sounds incredibly safe to me. It's a known commodity for essentially zero cost at that point in the draft. So why is that a bad pick?
What's fascinating here is that in the 15th round, you are no longer drafting for your starting lineup. You're drafting for lottery tickets. Kamara is a known depreciating asset at this point. We know exactly what his ceiling is at this stage of his career, and frankly, it isn't going to win you a week.
Okay, I see.
In those final rounds, drafting safe is actually a tactical error. You want the chaotic unknown. You want a rookie running back who is, you know, one training camp injury away from getting 20 touches a game.
Yeah.
The Kamara pick is a wasted roster spot because it offers false security instead of league-winning upside.
So false security is the real enemy here.
Absolutely.
That brings us to another A-tier team, the G-men, who clearly did not care about security at all.
Not even a little bit.
They got an A-minus by just building a rocket ship.
Mm.
They paired Jahmyr Gibbs at 1.1 with Josh Allen at 3.1.
Right.
They completely bypassed that steady index fund approach and just drafted for the highest possible weekly ceiling.
Yeah, and when you have Josh Allen and Jahmyr Gibbs on the same roster, you introduce a level of variance that just terrifies opponents.
Oh.
Your team can drop 150 points on any given Sunday. And they supplemented that ceiling with Brian Thomas at 6.12, which the Detta flagged as an absolute steal, by the way.
Well, that stood out to me, too.
If Thomas becomes a high-volume target, that 6.12 pick returns second-round value easily.
But their glaring error, at least according to the grade, was drafting George Pickens at 2.12. And I want to dig into the mechanics of this, because Pickens is immensely talented.
Mm-hmm.
The algorithm hates this pick, not because of the player, but because of the draft capital spent, right?
Exactly. Opportunity cost is basically the invisible currency of every single draft. At 2.12, you are in the premium zone for securing a high-volume foundational wide receiver or a super steady RB2.
Right.
Pickens is the definition of a volatile deep threat asset. So by spending premium second-round capital on a player with a terrifyingly low floor, they force themselves to have to hit perfectly on all their mid-round picks just to compensate.
Which they kind of did with Thomas, but it was risky.
Yeah, they survived it, but it was a structural risk that just wasn't necessary that early in the draft.
Let's talk about taking necessary risks then. Because the third A-tier team, Trader Joel Ayers, executed a strategy that honestly makes me sweat just looking at it.
Yeah, it's aggressive.
They were awarded the best RBWR foundation. I look at their first five picks, and it's the equivalent of angel investing in five volatile tech startups.
Yep.
Jonathan Taylor, Justin Jefferson,
mm-hmm.
Josh Jacobs, Breece Hall, who somehow fell to 4.5, which is an absolute anomaly.
Unbelievable.
And then Jalen Hurts.
It is a staggering collection of elite primary starters. Yeah. I mean, to have Breece Hall fall to the middle of the fourth round is the kind of board manipulation you usually only see in, like, mock draft simulations.
It never happens in real life.
Never.
But they paid a massive price for that opening run, because they completely punted the tight end position until the eighth round, grabbing Harold Fannin at 8.5.
Right.
And the algorithm flagged that as their fatal flaw.
Right.
It left them totally exposed in a crucial position.
And that is actually where I disagree slightly with the algorithm's rigidity on this one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yes, having Fannin as your TE1 is a glaring uncertainty. But Trader Joel's made a very calculated sacrifice there.
Okay.
They recognized that the value falling to them at running back and wide receiver was just too immense to pass up for a mid-tier tight end. They accepted a known weakness to maximize an overwhelming strength everywhere else.
Right. If you have Breece Hall as your flex, basically. Right.
Exactly. If Fannin is even barely functional, they dominate the league. If not, they have the currency to trade for a tight end later.
Okay. Well, you bring up trading, which perfectly segues into our next major theme, the illusion of the monopoly.
Yes.
We've looked at the balanced A-tier teams. Now let's look at the B-tier. Specifically a team named Winning All the Fantasies.
This one is wild.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They built the most absurd wide receiver room I have ever seen.
Yeah.
Jamar Chase, Malik Nabers, Garrett Wilson, and then Marvin Harrison at 7.2. Four elite receivers.
Just hoarding them.
Plus Lamar Jackson and George Kittle. Now I'm going to defend this.
Okay, go for it.
I think this is a genius tactic.
Mm-hmm.
By hoarding four premium receivers, they are actively starving the rest of the league.
Mm-hmm.
They are artificially inflating the value of the receiver position, and they can just hold the league hostage in the trade market to get whatever running backs they need later.
I see where you're going.
Right. So why did they only get a B plus?
Because fantasy football isn't a Wall Street commodity market.
Okay.
You are constrained by the physical limits of your starting lineup. The math simply does not support positional hoarding as a primary draft strategy.
Even if you plan to trade.
Especially then, because points sitting on your bench do absolutely nothing to help you win your weekly matchup. Yes, they denied other teams those receivers, but by doing so, they forced themselves to draft Cam Scatabo at 4.11 as their primary running back.
Which the grading flagged as a monumental reach, by the way.
A massive reach. And your argument about trading them later relies on this assumption of market liquidity that just doesn't exist.
What do you mean?
In reality, managers suffer from the endowment effect. They vastly overvalue their own drafted players. Pulling off a perfectly balanced blockbuster trade in week three to fix a structural hole you created in August is incredibly difficult.
Oh, so you're stuck with them.
You are banking your entire season on the hope that someone else will bail you out of a running back deficit that you deliberately caused yourself.
So they essentially built a mansion with no plumbing.
That is a perfect way to put it.
And they aren't the only ones playing with fire in the B tier. Not your average team built a terrifyingly high ceiling roster. Puka Nacua, Devon Achane, Rashee Rice, Davante Adams and Jaden Daniels.
Really strong.
Yeah, and they even scooped up Calvin Ridley at 16.9. But then in the middle of the draft, they completely short-circuited. They drafted quarterback Jackson Dart at 8.9 in a one-quarterback league.
Yeah, if we connect this to the bigger picture, this is a textbook example of misunderstanding leverage.
Right.
They already drafted Jaden Daniels, a highly drafted rookie with immense rushing upside. You draft Daniels specifically for his ceiling.
Yeah.
You want those rushing yards.
Exactly. So spending an eighth-round pick on a backup quarterback like Dart completely neutralizes the advantage you just gained. The middle rounds, like rounds 7 through 10, are the absolute most critical zones for drafting running back depth.
That's where you find the breakout guys.
That is exactly where the league-winning lottery tickets live.
And it's not an isolated incident either. D'Squarius Greenbane Sr. got an A-level foundation with A.J. Brown and an insane value in Saquon Barkley at 2.2.
Great start.
Yeah, but they destroyed their bench depth by taking Malik Willis, a backup quarterback with completely unclear playing time, at 12.2.
I just have to ask, why are managers so obsessed with drafting backup quarterbacks when they only need to start one?
It really stems from a profound discomfort with uncertainty.
Okay.
Managers look at their shiny new starting quarterback and immediately think, well, what if he gets hurt? What if he busts?
Yeah, panic sets in.
Right. They draft a backup just to soothe their own anxiety. But in fantasy sports, anxiety reduction is a losing strategy.
The waiver wire is always full of replacement-level quarterbacks who can fill in for a bye week or a random injury. But the waiver wire will never have a starting running back just sitting there in November.
Right. We get scooped up immediately.
Exactly. So wasting draft capital on a backup quarterback is drafting for a scenario that doesn't actually advance your win condition.
You are playing not to lose instead of playing to win.
Precisely.
There was also never say die in the B tier. Very boomer bust.
Yeah.
CMC, Kenneth Walker, Chris Olave, Joe Burrow. Great win with Chris Godwin at 8.4. But then they took Carnell Tate at 5.9, which added uncertainty way too early.
Yeah, it's just reaching for upside before your floor is established.
And then the team I share a birthday with, Aaron Glenn. They were deep at running back with Cook, Hampton, Etienne, and tight end with Laporta and Kelce. But they lacked an elite WR1, so another imbalanced build.
Yeah, they secured volume but sacrificed that elite receiver ceiling.
Which brings us to the most agonizing part of this data set, the C tier. The teams that committed outright structural sins. I want to go back to my steering wheel analogy from the top of the show because we really need to talk about the intimidators.
Let's do it.
This manager actually started brilliantly. CeeDee Lamb in the first round and Ashton Jeanty at 2.3.
Which is an elite combination of high floor receiving and high upside rushing.
Right. But then in round 7 at pick 7.10, they drafted the Houston defense. And then they drafted the Denver defense in round 12.
Let's expand on your steering wheel analogy because it captures the absurdity perfectly here.
Please.
A fantasy defense is a depreciating asset whose value is dictated entirely by who they are playing that week. The scoring differential between the team that drafts the number one defense in round 7 and the team that just streams random defenses off the waiver wire every Tuesday is statistically negligible over a 14-week season.
It's basically zero.
Exactly. Zero value over replacement. So when you draft a defense in round 7, you aren't just making a slightly suboptimal pick. You are actively passing on the engine of your car. You are leaving highly drafted rookie running backs or high target third-year receivers on the board because you are terrified of getting a flat tire.
And then a second defense in round 12.
Right. Drafting a second defense compounds the error because you're now clogging two roster spots for a position that operates on pure weekly variance.
It is the ultimate form of panic drafting. And we saw a different, arguably worse flavor of panic from the unvaccinated.
Yes, we did.
They earned the title of most volatile roster. Now they've secured a brilliant pass-catching core. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Nico Collins, and they grab Brock Bowers at 3.5, locking down the tight end spot early.
A very sharp way to open a draft.
Totally. But then you look at their running backs. Bucky Irving, Tyler Allgeier, Zach Charbonnet. It's entirely backups and handcuffs, no locked-in volume anywhere.
There, it's a mess.
And the reason they are so thin at running back is because they drafted Kyler Murray at 12.8.
Which in a vacuum is fine value, honestly.
It's fine value until you realize they had already drafted Trevor Lawrence and Brock Purdy.
Three quarterbacks.
Three quarterbacks in a one-quarterback league. They allocated roughly 25% of their starting and functional bench capital to a position where two of them will literally never see the field.
This is drafting without a holistic framework.
Yeah.
The manager became so fixated on the perceived quote-unquote value of Kyler Murray falling down the board that they completely ignored the structural reality of their own roster.
Right, they just saw a big name and clicked draft.
Exactly. It doesn't matter how far a player falls. If drafting them actively destroys your ability to field a competitive running back room, they drafted themselves into a corner where they now have to pray for injuries to three different starting NFL running backs just to have a viable weekly lineup.
And we see that early pressure forced terrible decisions everywhere, like Flaherty. They got a C grade because they took Javonte Williams at 3.6. I mean, they had good receivers with Amon-Ra and Mike Evans at 6.7. But investing premium third-round capital into a highly uncertain backfield situation before they had even stabilized their core roster just doomed them.
Yeah, that's a fundamental misreading of the draft board. You can take swings on uncertain backfields in the seventh or eighth rounds. Doing it in the third round means you are passing on guaranteed elite volume to take a total gamble.
Okay, so we've waded through the panic, the hoarding, and the tripper quarterback disasters. Let's pivot to the managers who stayed ice cold and exploited the board. Let's talk about the steals.
Good idea.
Hook and Ladder Club had a rough draft overall. They missed out on crucial receiver depth by reaching for Parker Washington at 6.1. But they were awarded the absolute best round two value of the entire deep dive. Derrick Henry at 2.1.
Securing an offense's primary goal line weapon at the top of the second round is exactly how you build a championship foundation.
Right.
It allows you to take those high upside swings later because your baseline projection is so heavily fortified.
But the ultimate steal, the pick that I think encapsulates everything we've talked about today, belongs to I Share a Birthday with Aaron Glenn.
Oh, yeah. This was wild.
They drafted James Conner at 16.6, round 16. This is a starting NFL running back available when most managers are drafting kickers.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So what does this all mean? Why does a starting running back fall to 16.6? I look at this and see a psychological blind spot. Are managers just so obsessed with finding the shiny new rookie that they completely ignore guaranteed touches? Or like, is there a psychological reason managers panic by a third quarterback or a second defense? Are we just inherently risk-averse creatures?
This raises an important question about information overload. By the time managers reach the 16th round, they have stared at their spreadsheets for so long that they literally outsmart themselves.
Right, their brains are fried.
Exactly. They see James Conner's age, they see his injury history, and they talk themselves out of the fundamental law of fantasy football, which is that volume is king.
Yeah.
The managers who took backup quarterbacks and second defenses were seeking false security. The manager who took James Conner at 16.6 embraced upside risk.
They bought the tires instead of the second steering wheel.
Precisely. You aren't looking for a flawless profile in the final rounds. You are looking for a pulse and a pathway to touches.
So when our listeners are staring down their own draft boards or looking at the rosters they've just built, the takeaway here is incredibly clear. Look at your bench. Do you have low upside security blankets like backup quarterbacks, secondary tight ends, extra defenses, or are you hoarding lottery tickets at running back and receiver?
Because that is the exact dividing line between the A grades and the C grades in this source material.
But I want to pull back the curtain even further here, because while we've spent all this time dissecting these grades, celebrating the A's, and analyzing the C's, there's a massive caveat to all of this data. A draft grade is just a snapshot of a single day in August.
Which brings up a rather provocative reality about this entire industry.
Oh, tell me.
We spend months building these complex algorithms. We grade these teams down to the decimal point, you know, arguing passionately over whether a manager deserves a B- or a C+. We seek that dopamine hit of the perfect draft.
Right. Everyone wants the A+.
Exactly. But ultimately, fantasy football is an exercise in the illusion of control.
I love this concept. Explain how that illusion traps people.
Well, we are using math to predict chaotic physical variables. We're trying to predict torn ligaments, sudden coaching changes, and November blizzards.
Yeah, stuff you literally can't put in a spreadsheet.
Right. So the danger of a deep dive like this or an A grade from an algorithm is that it gives managers a false sense of finality. If you believe your draft was perfect, you develop an emotional attachment to that spreadsheet.
Yep.
You become rigid.
You refuse to adapt.
Exactly. When reality inevitably diverges from your projections in week three, the manager who thinks they had a perfect draft will be way too slow to cut their mid-round mistakes.
Yeah, they'll just hold on forever.
They will hold on to a failing player just because the algorithm said it was a good pick, but the spreadsheet is not the territory.
That is such a brilliant lens to view this through. The draft is really just the opening argument. Waivers, trades, and sheer chaotic survival dictate the actual season. So to wrap this up, the highest mathematical advantages leaving this draft belong to the Fantasy Football Team, G-Men, and Trader Joel's. They've built incredible foundations. But a foundation is just where the house starts.
The rest is pure chaos management.
And that is exactly why we obsess over it. For everyone listening, take these lessons, apply them to your own leagues, and ruthlessly audit your own benches for false security. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Good luck out there, and may the waiver wire be incredibly kind.